So 3 weeks ago, when I proclaimed this to be the summer of life, much to Adonai's graciousness, we have started off our summer with the arrival of Stephen David Taylor on June 21st. Thus, we are off to a positive and life-affirming start. It was also 3 weeks ago when I shared this with you. There are no proxies in life. No one has the authority or power to act on your behalf unless you give it to them. Thus, there is liberty in life for which we are afforded by our Creator. And thus, if He has given us these inalienable rights, then there must be life and liberty in Torah. So, I'm playing off this theme because a couple weeks ago we looked at life and faith in Torah. Now, there's a word that many believers don't really like, but it's paramount. It is essential. It is necessary. And that word is obedience. We don't like the word obedience almost as much as we don't like the word submit, which I talked about, I think, last week. So just as no one can take your place, no one can do for you what is required of you. A fish cannot give birth to a lobster. I'd hate to see what that looked like. A cat cannot give birth to a dog. For in Genesis 1, 24 and 25, God said, "Let the earth bring forth each kind of living creature, each kind of livestock, crawling animal and wild beast." When the word kind is used, it's like basically procreation is to occur in the manner by which God created them. So cows bring forth cows, and dogs bring forth dogs, and so on. For God made each kind of wild beasts, each kind of livestock, and every kind of animal that crawls along the ground, and God saw that it was good. That is, unless man tries to create such oddities. Adonai made each kind of animal, and thus is the author, the creator of them, and further the one with authority over them. Therefore, Adonai gave the authority to name the animals to Adam. In Genesis 2, 19 and 20, so from the ground, Adonai formed every wild animal and every bird that flies in the air, and he brought them to the person to see what he would call them. Whatever the person would call each living creature, that was to be its name. So the person gave names to all the livestock, to the birds in the air, to every wild animal. But for Adam, there was not found a companion suitable for helping him. So this is Genesis chapter 2, verses 19 and 20. So an apple tree cannot produce oranges, and vice versa. All are ordered by Adonai to produce from their own kind, Genesis 1, 11. God said, "Let the earth put forth grass, seed-producing plants, and fruit trees, each yielding its own kind of seed-bearing fruit." And thus that is how it was. In all things, Adonai created plants, animals, and mankind. All are created with an inherent nature. That is, there are certain traits, characteristics, that are undeniable and cannot be changed or even modified, no matter how much man attempts to circumvent Adonai as creator. On a small scale, man has produced hybrid plants. So you see cross sections of different flowers, creating an entirely different flower in itself. On a larger scale, man has modified our food supply in order to improve crop yields and thus profits. And this is done at the same time. Fruit and vegetable-bearing plants have been modified to produce only one crop. So when you plant tomato seeds in 1 year and you say, oh, well, I'm going to save them for another year and I'm going to cut them down and they'll grow up again, you're only going to get one season of fruit from those seeds. The effects of these genetically modified creations have likely impacted our food and thus have impacted us in that we, our modernized creation, are experiencing many more food allergies and other infirmities than at any time in history. Thus, tinkering with what Adonai has created has impacted his creation. Think of it this way. A combustion engine was designed to operate on gasoline. Yet using a 100% plant-based product will not produce the same efficient results. You are still being fueled, but your body is not able to operate at its original manufactured specifications. Its optimal level as intended by Adonai. Then there is the extreme whereby man is crossbreeding animals and even attempting to clone them. That is a technique where scientists use to make exact genetic copies of living things, from the genes to the cells to the tissues, whereby even whole animals can be cloned. I think it goes back about 40 years ago where, I don't remember her name, I think it was Dolly the Sheep, who was cloned, I think it was late 70s, early 80s. A mule is the offspring of a male donkey and a female horse. A hinny or hiney is the domestic equine hybrid that is the offspring of a male horse and a female donkey. In crossbreeding a horse and a donkey, whichever way, neither of their offspring, whether mule or hiney, can produce. Both are sterile. Thus, as we climb the ladder of progress, attempting to further improve upon Adonai's creation, the more harm we are doing. For only the Creator, who is the author of life, can actually bring forth life in its fullness, whereby life produces life. For Adonai is the one who authorized vegetation, animals, and mankind to reproduce their own kind. We are building the Tower of Babel today with the same intended outcome. Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that has its top reaching up into heaven so that we can make a name for ourselves. We're trying to be creators where there is truly only one creator. God's already confused our languages, so that's not going to happen any further. But this is the intent of Genesis 11:4, which is verse 6. Adonai said, look, the people are united. They all have a single language, and see what they're starting to do. At this rate, nothing they set out to accomplish will be impossible for them. So God has created us in his image and likeness, that basically he has also created us with his ingenuity, but only to a certain level. Yet he is not coming to confuse our language again, but has brought forth warnings through his word via his messengers. Shaul conveys this, claiming to be wise, Romans 1, starting in verse 22. Claiming to be wise, they have become fools. In fact, they have exchanged the glory of the immortal God for mere images, like a mortal human being, or like birds, animals, or reptiles. This is why God has given them up to the vileness of their hearts' lust, to the shameful misuse of each other's bodies. They have exchanged the truth of God for falsehood by worshiping and serving created things rather than the Creator. Consider the prophet Jeremiah, who offers the words of Adonai to a nation in the midst of judgment. Jeremiah 8:8, how can you say we are wise? Adonai's Torah is with us, when in fact the lying pen of the scribes has turned it into falsehood. The wise are put to shame, alarmed and trapped, They have rejected the word of Adonai, so what wisdom do they have? Or how about these words from Shaul to the Corinthians? 1 Corinthians chapter 1, starting in verse 18, for this message about the execution stake is nonsense to those in the process of being destroyed. But to us in the process of being saved, it is the power of God. Indeed, the Tanakh says, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and frustrate the intelligence of the intelligent. This is from Isaiah 29:14 that Shaul is quoting. Where does that leave the philosopher, the Torah teacher, or any of today's thinkers? Hasn't God made the world's wisdom look pretty foolish? For God's wisdom ordained that the world, using its own wisdom, would not come to know him. Therefore, God decided to use the nonsense of what we proclaim as his means of saving those who come to trust in him. So Adonai's wisdom ordained the world through his wisdom. Thus, there is an established order that resides in all that he has created. Thus, in our created form, we are programmed to do that which has been ordered. We were created in the image and likeness of God, Genesis 1:26. Let us make humankind in our image, in the likeness of ourselves, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, the animals, and over all the earth, and over every crawling creature that crawls on the earth. So God has given us his wisdom, not to create, for lack of another words, a Frankenstein earth, but to, in essence, rule over what he has already created. Thus, there shouldn't be any doubt. That is until we were infected with a virus, not dissimilar to a computer virus, where our original programmed functions have been circumvented by the virus. Thus, a computer programmed to do that and only that which its program allows is now functioning outside of its own parameters. Our acquired sin disorder is an introduced virus that has circumvented our inherent function to be obedient to our Creator, not because his intent is to control us, but that we should have life through this obedience. Shaul affirms this very dynamic and struggle we all have encountered at one time or another, and that is the struggle, the battle between the Torah of sin and Adonai's Torah, which brings forth life. For Shaul conveys in Romans 7, starting in verse 15, I don't understand my own behavior. I don't do what I want to do. Instead, I do the very thing I hate. Now, if I am doing what I don't want to do, I am agreeing that the Torah is good. But now it is no longer the real me doing it, but the sin housed inside me. It's not the sin that made me do it, but it's in essence this battle that's going on within all of us. For I don't do the good I want. Instead, the evil that I don't want is what I do. But if I am doing what the real me doesn't want, it is no longer the real me doing it, but the sin housed inside me. What is the real me? The real me is the image and likeness that we're created in. Keeping in mind, we have been contaminated by a virus. For in my inner self, I completely agree with God's Torah. But in my various parts, I see a different Torah. One that battles with the Torah of Adonai in my mind and makes me a prisoner of sin's Torah. Just as God has a Torah of things to do, the adversary actually has the exact opposite. Therefore, it's its own Torah in itself. For Shaul conveys this in verse 24. What a miserable creature I am. Who will rescue me from this body bound for death? Thanks be to God, he will. Through Yeshua the Messiah, our Lord. To sum up, he says, with my mind, I am a slave to God's Torah, but with my old nature, I am a slave to sin's Torah. So Torah brings forth life. The Torah of Adonai promotes life, whereas the Torah of sin promotes death. Consider Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 11 and 12. For this mitzvah, which I am giving you today, is not too hard for you. It is not beyond your reach. It isn't in the sky so that you need to ask, who will go up into the sky for us? Bring it to us and make us hear it so that we can obey it. Obedience is encouraged by Adonai. What he has revealed is not beyond our reach, nor impossible to do. He did not set us up to fail, but made it possible for us to succeed. Our stumbling block has been the ASD that resides in us and has infiltrated and corrupted our original programming. As we continue our study of Torah, I would hope you have come to realize how even a Gentile can do what is required of Adonai. Yes, there are sacrifices to be made, sacrifices that are pleasing to the old nature, desired by the old nature, for one might even say craved by the old nature. Yet when one considers what you will obtain through denying the old nature, you will come to realize it was well worth it. In Deuteronomy 30, verses 13 and 14. Likewise, it isn't beyond the sea, so that you need to ask, who will cross the sea for us? Bring it to us and make us hear it, so that we can obey it. On the contrary, the word is very close to you, in your mouth, even in your heart. Therefore, you can do it. This is even before Yeshua promised the Ruach HaKodesh to reside within us. The word of Adonai is very close to you. It is now even closer today than it was when Israel was in the wilderness. It is so close that the very power that brought forth the word of Adonai resides in you. Consider Ezekiel, starting in verse 22 of chapter 36. Therefore, tell the house of Israel that Adonai Elohim says this, I am not going to do this for your sake, house of Israel, but for the sake of my holy name, which you have been profaning among the nations where you went. I will set apart my great name to be regarded as holy, since it has been profaned in the nations. You profaned it among them. The nations will know that I am Adonai, when before their eyes I am set apart through you to be regarded as holy. For I will take you from among the nations, gather you from all the countries, and return you to your own soil. Then I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your uncleanness and from all your idols. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit inside you. I will take the stony heart out of your flesh and give you a new heart of flesh. I will put my spirit inside you and cause you to live by my laws, respect my rulings, and obey them. You will live in the land I gave to your ancestors. You will be my people, and I will be your God. I will save you from all your uncleanness. I will summon the grain and increase it, and not send famine against you. This promise, or promises within this passage, made by Adonai to the children of Israel, is available to all who call upon the name of the Lord Yeshua. When Adonai poured out his spirit upon the Gentiles, in Acts chapter 10, verse 44, Kepha had gone to the house of Cornelius, and he was sharing with them the gospel, the good news of Yeshua. When while he was still speaking, the Ruach HaKodesh fell on all who were hearing the message. All the believers from the circumcision faction who had accompanied Kepha were amazed that the gift of the Ruach HaKodesh was also being poured out on the Goyim. For they heard them speaking in tongues and praising God. Kepha's response was, "Is anyone prepared to prohibit these people from being immersed in water? After all, they have received the Ruach HaKodesh just as we did." Thus, the promise made to Israel has been realized through Yeshua and is also available to anyone who puts their trust in Yeshua and following his instructions, his mitzvot, mitzvot that are no different than that of which Adonai revealed to Moses and the people at Sinai, the foundational conditions of the covenant in the 10 words. Yeshua affirms all that was given at Sinai through his life, in that we know this. Yeshua was without sin, conveyed by Kepha. Indeed, this is what you were called to, because the Messiah too suffered on your behalf, leaving an example so that you should follow in his steps. He committed no sin, Kepha conveys. He committed no sin, nor was any deceit found on his lips. For we know that sin is transgression of Torah according to Yochanan, 1 John chapter 3. Everyone who keeps sinning is violating Torah. Indeed, sin is violation of Torah. You know that he appeared in order to take away sins, and that there is no sin in him. So no one who remains united with him continues sinning. Everyone who does continue sinning has neither seen him nor known him. Simply put, obedience to Yeshua is obedience to Adonai. Thus, what Adonai has presented to Israel is no different than what Yeshua has presented. In Yochanan chapter 14 and verse 15, where he conveys, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments." Thus Yeshua could have said these very words when he was with us. And this is Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 15. "Look, I am presenting you today with on the one hand life and good, and on the other hand death and evil. And that I am ordering you today to love Adonai your God, to follow his ways, and to obey his mitzvot, regulations, and rulings. For if you do, you will live and increase your numbers, and Adonai your God will bless you in the land you are entering in order to take possession of it. But if your hearts turn away, if you refuse to listen, if you are drawn away to prostrate yourselves before other gods and serve them, I am announcing to you today that you will certainly perish. You will not live long in the land you are crossing the Jordan in order to possess. I call on heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have presented you with life and death, the blessing and the curse. Therefore, choose life so that you will live, you and your descendants, loving Adonai your God, paying attention to what he says and clinging to him, for that is the purpose of your life. On this depends the length of time you will live in the land Adonai swore he would give to your ancestors Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov." So here we have, in essence, a testimony given by Adonai to the children of Israel that could have very easily by given Yeshua at the time that he was on the earth. "I'm presenting you life on one hand, death on the other. You will certainly not enter the kingdom," Yeshua conveys. "The kingdom of God is at hand if..." So this message of Deuteronomy 30 is really no different. In a way, he did say this, as is conveyed through Yeshua in 1 John chapter 3. "This is his command," Yochanan says, that we are to trust in the person and power of the Son, Yeshua, Messiah, and to keep loving one another just as he commanded us. Those who obey his commands remain united with him, and he with them. Here's how we know that he remains united with us: by the Spirit whom he gave us. So you know if you're united with Messiah because of who resides in you. So let me conclude with the remaining part of Shaul's presentation to believers in Rome. This is Romans chapter 8, starting in verse 1. Therefore, there is no longer any condemnation awaiting those who are in union with Messiah Yeshua. Why, he asks? Because the Torah of the Spirit, which produces this life in union with Messiah Yeshua, has set us free from the Torah of sin and death. For what the Torah could not do by itself, because it lacked the power to make the old nature cooperate, God did by sending his own Son as a human being with a nature like our own sinful one, but without sin. God did this in order to deal with sin, and in so doing, he executed the punishment against sin in human nature, so that the just requirement of Torah might be fulfilled in us, who do not run our lives according to what our old nature wants, but according to what the Spirit wants. For those who identify with their old nature set their minds on the things of the old nature. But those who identify with the Spirit set their minds on the things of the Spirit. Having one's mind controlled by the old nature is death, but having one's mind controlled by the Spirit is life and shalom. For the mind controlled by the old nature is hostile to God. One might even use the word disobedient to God, because it does not submit. Ooh, there's that word again. Does not submit itself to God's Torah. We are to submit to God's Torah because it brings forth life, not death. Thus, in verse 8, Shaul conveys, thus those who identify with their old nature cannot please God. But you do not identify with your old nature, but with the Spirit, provided the Spirit of God is living inside you. Life begets life, remember? The Spirit is giving life because God considers you righteous. And if the Spirit of the one who raised Yeshua from the dead is living in you, then the one who raised the Messiah Yeshua from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through his Spirit living in you. Life begets life. Obedience begets life. Thus, there is life for all who believe in Adonai and what he has done in sending his Son, that our obedience towards Yeshua is no different than our obedience towards Adonai's Torah. For the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. The very aspect of Yeshua's life is an embodiment of living according to Torah, with the end result being life in the kingdom and life eternal. So there is most certainly a cost or a price for disobedience. And I copied this down, but it's not in here. One of Newton's laws, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Equal and opposite means equal, the same intensity. Opposite meaning directly contrary. Thus, the equal and opposite reaction to obedience is disobedience. The equal and opposite reaction to life is death. The equal and opposite response to the kingdom is a lake of fire, separation from God. So keep these things in mind. When someone asks you, well, you're being a little legalistic, aren't you? Well, why are you so passionate about that which Yeshua has done away with. A sit-down moment might be required to share with people that Yeshua was not the end of the law, as some have translated. Because if you truly believe that he is the end of the law, then you have created one of the greatest contradictions of scriptures that no one can truly overcome. Because if he said he did not do away with the law, yet he's the end of the law, how do you reconcile such a contradiction, such a paradox? You can't. So one cannot be true. And ultimately, Yeshua's life is validation, further evidence to everyone. It's conveyed that Yeshua was even obedient to death. He lived a sinless life. He had life. Yet he died in order to defeat death. Life defeats death. Life brings forth life. Life defeats death. There is nothing more powerful. So keep these things in mind when someone mocks your obedience of being here on Shabbat, or mocks your obedience in rejoicing in the Moedim, or maybe keeping kosher. So keep these things in mind. Obedience has a price. Disobedience has a greater price. The disobedience, you will never be able to cover that bill. Obedience, the bill has been paid for you. But you're still required to partake in that which is required of you. So if everybody will please rise.